This is live fallout from Gavin Dudley hearing the Samsung A72, or at least the Samsung A-Series pricing. We are fresh off of the A-Series launch, which was a YouTube live stream. No fancy localized South African version of it. This is episode 117 of the Overclock ZA podcast. And Gavin, thoughts? You're not happy with the pricing. So A72 is coming at you for 10,000 Rand. A52, 8,000 Rand. A32 5G, 7,000 Rand. A32, 6,000 Rand.
Okay, this is just heartbreaking, okay? Because it reminds me of, like, in the hi-fi world, there used to be a Sony tax. Basically, whatever Sony did, it just felt obliged to mark it up by 25 or 30% just because of the brand equity. Apple does that too, but Apple can get away with it because Apple's not competing against anyone else. Apple is just competing with itself. You know, there's Apple and then there's the rest. So Apple's not competing with anyone. They can set the price any way they like. But in a competitive Android market, this whole idea of taxing people for their brand loyalty just sucks, you know. There's no way they can justify, not on the specs I heard and the features I saw, that kind of pricing. I mean, at 10,000 Rand, I think you're now dealing with serious phones. And I mean, and I think you can expect 5G in your phone at 10,000 Rand and so on. So the A70, the original A70 was a fabulous phone. The A31 is almost the best budget phone in the 5,000 to 6,000 category. Now the A32 has kind of ruined all that. It's like, you know, when VW made a Golf and it was the affordable car, and now the Golf is like nearly half, close to $500,000? I don't know. And, you know, the Polo has basically become the new Golf. And then the Polo, and then what these other little IO things, what are the tiny little Golf, tiny little VWs called?
I forget, but I know
like
which one.
Ego or Wego or something like
no,
that.
No, that's become... the Toyota ones.
Oh, right.
The IGO.
Okay.
I forget what they're called, yeah.
But it's become what the Golf used to be. You know, the Golf just got more. It's the same with the Corolla. It just became more and more expensive. And now it's not exactly the affordable car it started off as. Same with this ridiculous A-Series malarkey. You know, it was supposed to be the affordable side of Samsung, if there is an affordable side. Mm. This is not it. You know, the A72, the A52, and the A32 is not it, man.
I don't know. I think it's their pocket. I think it's their sweet spot. I mean, these phones sell by the bajillions for a reason. So a long time ago, Samsung used to do the Ace series, the J series. Then there were like core versions of those ones. And then they had like this A series that was just bubbling all the time. And they had like a whole bunch of stuff. And then they decided, no, we're just going to slam everything now as the A series. So now it like goes from A02 up to A72 now and everything in between. And I was actually explaining this to my daughter. It's like you can find a Samsung device at every 1,000 Rand increment.
Yeah, I just don't know about that.
3,500 Rand up to thingy. And like one of the things that I tweeted was during the live stream was that everything from the A52 down to like the A21 kind of performs the same. It's like the same phone, just with different screen sizes and different
I think they get quite feeble towards the, you know, the A10 and 20 level.
A51 was all sorts of feeble.
Was it? I can't remember. Well, I mean, I thought A31 was not a bad phone for, it was 5,000 Rand at the time, because it had an AMOLED screen for one thing. I mean, you know, what phone at that price has an AMOLED screen? Okay, but all this is, it's actually got less and less to do with the quality of Samsung's products. It's got more and more to do with how it's positioning its brand, how it's, you know, spreading out its range of products. It's got nothing to do with the quality of the product. It's got entirely to do with marketing. You might also get a high quality product as a coincidence, but really this is about how they conquer the world. That's what this is about.
I think it's about brand strategy. They nailed it in terms of the mix that they needed. So I think A52 is the only one of the A72 and A52 that launched today that has a 5G variant. It doesn't seem like we're going to be getting that 5G variant here. Both A52 and A72 share chipsets and main camera sensors. And those are Qualcomm Snapdragon 720Gs. No Exynos, coming to South Africa, which is on its own a win, because now they're touting beyond 2 days of battery life, over 48 hours of runtime on the A52 and the A72. I do not believe it. I'm desperate to get my hands on one of those, because this past weekend I toasted half of the Samsung S21 Ultra's 5,000 milliamp hour battery in 40 minutes of a Skype call, where it overheated and I couldn't use it after like 35 minutes. And then, yeah, it was embarrassing. Yeah, I want to get my hands on this thing. I'm happy that we're getting, I like the mix. I like the water resistance. I like the 64 megapixel sensor, camera sensor. Sure. I like the look of the devices. But yeah, on a pricing perspective, I think they got it wrong.
Okay, so here's a difficult question for you. What is your best value Samsung phone today? So you've got to take on board the price, the critical features, and how long it's going to last and be viable, you know, to use and so on. What is the sweet spot for the best value Samsung phone?
Unfortunately, it's that S20 FE that I despise so much.
Interesting you bring that up. I must say that felt fantastic in hand. It had top spec. So for those who don't know what we're talking about, the S20 FE, which stands for Fan Edition, was a slightly jiggled and slightly stripped down version of the original S20, which launched this time last year, basically. And somewhere around October, November, they launched basically that same phone, slightly stripped down. But even then, I had a fabulous experience with it because it was that good. It was that good that almost 10 months after they'd launched the original S20, the S20 FE Fan Edition was still almost the best Android experience I'd had at that point. How much is an FE now? I think we complained because it was way too expensive. It was like 18 or something.
Yeah, I think it's come down to like 15.
Over a year old, yeah.
Yeah, because the S21 is now hovering at that 18 mark. Right. For the base there. In other Samsung news, they are now claiming that critical chip shortages is putting the Note series at risk. I think they were going to bullet the Note series for this year anyway, because it's rumored, strongly rumored now, and I have it on a very reliable source on the inside, who's telling me that S Pen functionality is coming to Z Fold 3.
All the high-end, yeah.
Yeah, so that's probably the next high-end device we'll see from Samsung. I think Samsung kind of almost had it their way this year. And now the cracks are starting to show.
Well, I don't know. What cracks are you referring to?
The pricing strategies are just seeming predatory in the absence of solid competition from LG.
Yeah, but those are not cracks. This is the thing, is that they basically can do that because they know they can get away with it, you see. And they are going to get away with it, and people are going to buy the A72 at that price and be happy with their purchase because they have a Samsung. It's going to last. It's a brand they know and trust. But they are being preyed on. I agree with you. But, you know, you can't argue with their strategy. I mean, is Apple any different? No, that's exactly what they do, you know. So what continues to amaze me is that they can actually support a range of what must be 12 or 14 handsets they have in the market right now, at least could be more. How they support all those handsets, ship them around the world, ship the spare parts for them around the world, have marketing campaigns for each of them. How do you compete with Apple, who has like 4 phones in the market and all it has to do is support those 4? You know, they've got like 14 at least. You know, and they've got to support all of those. So it seems like such hard work to me.
So here's the other thing. A52, A72 coming with 3 versions of Android OS updates and 4 years of security updates, which makes me very happy for consumers.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, I mean, if your A72 today, how is that going to perform with Android 12 and Android 13? It's going to be a dog by the time you get to Android 13, without a doubt, man.
Will still be there. It will still be in the pipeline for support. And I mean,
I know.
Devices are getting their Android 11 like now and from earlier this year. So, yeah, I mean, we need to give credit where credit is due.
But talking about credit. Move on. Yeah.
Talking about credit, NFTs, Gavin. What do you know of NFTs, non-fungible tokens?
Tell me what you know,
and then I will tell you what I know.
I think you just like saying the word fungible all the time. That's why you keep saying it, fungible. I mean, fungible has a meaning to me, but I have no idea what this token business is. I can sort of imagine in my mind's eye, but why don't you enlighten me then?
So there's a whole spiel about NFTs doing the rounds now. After Elon Musk actually made a song about NFTs, and he was going to sell it as an NFT, and then he reneged on that, and he was like, it doesn't feel right to sell this. So there's two sides to cryptocurrency, right?
Yeah.
The one side is like Bitcoin that gains a lot of value through its transactions and the demand, and you can, it's an asset class and everything, all that's awesome. And the work that goes into it is to verify the transactions, and that can then create more Bitcoin. So Bitcoin, there's a finite amount, but you can create more of it until you like reach the limit.
Yeah.
Where the non-fungible token comes in, it works on the second part of crypto. So all cryptos, all coins, or crypto coins are built on a blockchain system so that there can be a ledger of transactions.
Yes.
So there's an ownership ledger and a smart contract as part of the blockchain. So for me, smart contracts are actually the power behind blockchains because it allows smaller enterprises to operate as like massive multinational conglomerates without having the legal team.
Okay, sure. Because it's all baked. It's baked into the system. Okay, all right.
So on that, you can track ownership very easily and very securely. So the moment you can attach a digital vehicle, so a song or a video clip or something to the blockchain, you can then trade the ownership for a return.
You can track the sale of that item, and you can put it on sale because it's in the blockchain system, so it can be managed as a property, as an item. Okay.
So there's been a lot of talk about like this because there's video clips that's being sold. There's Nyancat, that meme that got sold. There's a lot of digital art that's being traded right now. Like NFTs are like the buzz at the moment, and everyone's like, but you can make copies of it, and it's like yes, but and you can view things like you can view the videos,
the video clip,
but you don't own it, and it's that putting the value on the actual ownership that of it. Because like even like language, like I've had this conversation with a lot of people where they actually reject the idea. You might reject it yourself, but like when a baby enters this world into an English speaking household.
We should immediately attach it to the blockchain. Yes. Okay.
Yes. You continue. It should be an NFT.
So that we can track how it gets passed around the world, you know, who it marries, where it lives.
Elon, speak to us. We got it. We got it locked.
Yeah. Okay.
So baby is born. And Dada, those are just words that the baby wants to communicate, and it says these easy to mouth syllables. The baby doesn't know that there's meaning to it. It's
okay.
Because the parents then give the feedback, the positive reinforcement, then the baby makes the connection. If I say this to this face, that I want
get this response.
From, I get this response. So then the meaning gets attached meaning to everything. We all sit together and we decide that currency and some currencies can be valued higher than others. Moody's can say, because South Africa is doing the same thing that every other country is doing, we must now give them junk investment status because their government is as dysfunctional as every other government on the planet. But that's a different conversation.
Yeah, I mean, you are ranging far and wide with your non-fungible tokens so far. I mean, we've had babies coming into the world, Elon Musk's song.
It's just the idea of like, we attach value to things and then trading that can make money. So, I like the way that blockchain is functioning now, that it's becoming more mainstream, that people are finding practical use cases for it. And I'm all about that NFT life, man.
Yeah, how about this for an idea? I mean, someone floated a similar idea by me, but it made like so much sense. You know, this constant thing going on about artists who can't get their money back after their songs have been played on the radio, and, you know, they fight for, why don't they just blockchain those songs? And every time someone plays the damn song, it registers on the blockchain as having been played. And in this way, the money can be like, you know, backed up properly.
That's too much admin. So that's like the other side of this conversation.
Well, it's just an automated way of tracking all the transactions on that song. So, you know, everybody who's played that song.
That's ownership transactions, not like streaming. Streaming has ruined ownership. Like, do you even own music anymore?
No, the reason I
purchased the new song.
No, the reason I thought about this whole idea of attaching it to songs is precisely because when you get Windows, you don't own Windows. You own a license to use Windows.
Yeah.
When you go out and buy the new Beyoncé album, you don't own the Beyoncé album. You own the right to listen to her music. You know, she's given you a copy of it that you can use to listen to. You don't actually own the music. She still owns the music, or her record company still owns the music. And I guess what you're saying is something similar here. We need to find a way to, or this is a might be a better way for us to move goods around. Or, I mean, so that's the point. How would you license things using a blockchain? But I'm concerned that we're going to lose our listeners here, and we're going to get into the weeds and then not be able to get out of the weeds.
Bottom line, non-fungible tokens. I'm in support of it. It's a bit buzzworthy right now. There's a lot of hype. So there's like things selling. I think there was an artwork that sold for like $69 million or something. And it's being driven for varying questionable reasons. I think it's a great way to get blockchain technology into the mainstream. And we'll see a lot more practical applications of it going forward.
Yeah, unfortunately, the damn blockchain is like VR. It's been spoken about for so long that it becomes easy to diss it because nobody's really pulled up a solid business case that's like flawless and bulletproof. Mm. You know, so it's easy to diss it like VR. It's not hyper real. It's just realistic. It's not hyper real. You know, it's not like being in another reality. That's where we're going. But to get there, it's going to be a whole lot of stuff along the way. Same with blockchain. Mm. When you bring up the case of this artist, I was fascinated by this. I'm fascinated by digital art in general and the sale and sharing thereof, you know, precisely because, as you pointed out, there can only be one original no matter how many copies are made. Hmm. So, I mean, this guy, his art name is Beeple, B-E-E-P-L, Beeple. His real name is Mike Winkelmann, who was relatively unknown, but he's been creating these works where he creates a new digital artwork every day and then composites them all together to create a bigger work. And he sold this last one for $69 million. I mean, that is just absurd. You know, I mean, I haven't looked closely at the work, so I don't know what it's all about. All I know is it's a composition that looks like a collage of lots and lots of little pictures.
Yeah.
And it looks vibrant and colorful. But, you know, the value of $69 million obviously is linked to a whole lot of other things, like its uniqueness, or, you know, who the hell's going to pay $69 million just for the pleasure of looking at this work? It's not that. Someone believes this is an investment of some kind in a one-of-a-kind artwork.
Mm.
I don't know how they got to $69 million, man. Anyway, so this was sold at auction. I think it was at Sotheby's for $69 million.
Yeah, yeah. It's getting crazy right now. What else is getting crazy, Gavin? There is no more ICASA Spectrum auction to end this month. It was supposed to happen on the 25th. It was supposed to happen next week. Not going to happen anymore because the High Court stalled in favor of Telkom and, bizarrely, ETV.
Yeah, so bizarre. Okay, so Telkom has been like pleading poverty and making out like MTN and Vodacom have got like a built-in advantage, you know, whereas we've pointed out that Telkom already has more bandwidth available, more frequencies available to it than either of the other two. In fact, more than the other two combined. They just don't have pockets quite as deep as Vodacom and MTN. And Telkom wants to make sure it doesn't get squeezed out of what's going down in the Spectrum auction. But as a consumer, the issue with the Spectrum auction is that this is what we actually need to push the country forward. Okay, this kind of thing is what stimulates the economy. people start up businesses. Their business communications are quick and easy and cheap. And, you know, all this kind of thing. This is what actually pushes the economy forward. So the real one of the reasons the spectrum auction is held up is, well, I suppose to satisfy the likes of Telkom. But the country also needs that cash to come into its coffers. It's going to be billions and billions that they really need. So I'm quite surprised that they just kicked this can down the road. So, because we all know they need that money.
So Telkom was saying that the 800 megahertz bands, like the terrestrial analog TV bands, are kind of useless to them right now. And that was the first lot that was being auctioned. And that was because Telkom said it was weighted in favor of like Vodacom and MTN. So Vodacom and MTN were actually excluded from the first lot. And they like, yo, we can't bid on stuff we can't use. And then MTN was like, you know what? You can't use it yet because we're still using it to push our product out.
Yeah, that was the problem. They actually haven't cleared the TV stations off the frequencies that they're busy selling.
Now
you know?
They are. They currently are. In next week, some obscure place, municipality is being taken off, switched off, and it's going to spread from the north down to the south. And by, I think, Q1 next year, it will be completely switched off, which would only be 7 years after the
international deadline. It was supposed to be, 7 years. I mean, do you know how far technology has marched in 7 years? I mean, you know, when the original arguments we had 7 years ago are just completely irrelevant to the arguments we're having now. The longer we argue about it, the less likely we are to get the stuff organized. So again, for those who haven't followed the thread, in order to create a lot more radio wave frequencies, in order to have a lot more wireless communications, in order to have 5G, and in order to have a lot more cellular service and all these kind of things, we need to get television off those radio frequencies and onto a digital platform where they use a very, very narrow band of, you know, wireless reception. At the moment, if you tune into a TV station, it kind of consumes a whole block of frequencies because it's hard to control. In the future, they'll be able to get that down to an extremely narrow frame, and that will free up lots and lots of radio waves for digital communications to you, wireless digital communications. But getting the TVs to this place has been a huge issue because you need to have set-top boxes that can tune in those frequencies and all sorts of things.
What I don't get is I thought that OVHD, OpenView, was ETV's big play into the set-top box realm. And now they're turning around and saying, but we don't want any interference in the, because that's like, I think it's like 85% of their business is still via terrestrial frequency. And it's like,
system.
Well, what about this other thing? But anyway, there's a lot of talks. There will be subsidies. I think households with a mean income of lower of 3,500 or lower will
get the box.
They'll get it for free, completely 100% subsidized, and then it's a sliding scale going up, so rich folk who don't have DStv decoders or something, other sorts of maybe digital TVs, they will be charged a price for that set-top box, government set-top box. It's a mess right now.
It's a huge mess, because if you go out and buy a modern TV set today, anything around the 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 rand mark, they have these digital tuners built into them. So you can actually get all these extra channels that you didn't even know were out there. There are SABC channels. But there's a whole lot of SABC news channels. There's a whole lot of ETV additional channels like HD movies and all sorts of things out there that are being broadcast every day that like no one knows about. So I guess they've been doing that in the build-up to this point now. So I guess what we're saying is that for the spectrum auction to happen, they first have to get the migration to digital TV organized. And, you know, it's just like, as usual, government's left hand doesn't know what its right hand's doing. And we must just hold thumbs. This is, however, what pushes the country forward. Both the digital TV reception and the freeing up of the radio frequencies are what pushes the country forward. And that's why we must push for that.
So, Gavin, in the world of technology, outside of what transpired today with the Samsung launch, there was a Dell Tech Byte event. I'm not going to lie. I went to the barber during that time. There was a lady talking about elephants.
Okay,
for a long time. The great Aki Anastasio came on as well. And yeah, I don't understand the PC market right now. And I say this because Intel have just roped in Justin Long famously from the I'm a Mac adverts that Apple used to run. Mac versus
PC. Justin Long the Mac guy or the PC guy?
The Mac guy. Okay. So Intel has got Justin Long in a series of three or four ads right now, just trashing on the dual screen or the extended screen capabilities of the M1 Max, which is lacking, and a whole bunch of other things. And so they're playing the marketing offensive instead of actually just bringing capable
making better products. I mean, the best way for them to respond is to make a better product, you know? Bloody hell.
Would you recommend someone who's willing to spend 20,000 Rand on a general purpose laptop today?
Yes.
Would you recommend them buy a Windows PC or just get the M1 Mac?
Okay. I mean, okay, the M1 Mac you're going to get at that price is going to be almost a bare bones kind of model.
MacBook Air.
Yeah, but it's going to be the entry level model. So it's going to be like, 256 gig storage and so on. So it's going to be very, very basic. I mean, maybe I would even recommend it there because here's the thing. People who have to ask whether they need a Mac or not must just get the Mac. That's the thing. Yeah. If you even think a Mac thought, if you think you might be an iPhone user, then nothing else will eventually satisfy you. It's not like you must pretend to have a sophisticated discussion with yourself about it. If you want an iPhone, just go and get the iPhone because nothing else will satisfy. If you want an Apple computer, just go and get one because there isn't really a sort of a rational argument, which is what you're asking me. I suppose a MacBook Air, you could argue, is the best 20,000 Rand laptop on the market at any spec, maybe. I might agree with you on that even, hey? I think if you're in a corporate environment or a very small business environment, maybe it's not the most compatible. But if you're just like an operator, wants a computer, you know, do lots of different things, then your MacBook Air might be fine for 20 grand. Yeah.
It's like the only people who I will steer away from a MacBook Air and even a MacBook Pro up at the like 28,000 Rand, 26,000 Rand price point is if you want to game. If you want a game, get a gaming laptop.
Although, I mean, even that, I think that in a year or two, I think Apple's gaming capabilities are going to kick people's ass. I think this is one of those things that people didn't see coming, I think.
Because of cloud-based gaming?
Partly that, but also just this M1 chip, I reckon, once they get the GPU kind of built up to the level where where the CPU is, it's going to scare the NVIDIAs of the world, I think. Just as Intel must be probably still rocked by what happened with the M1 like 6 months ago, you know. I mean, NVIDIA and those people are also going to get like a shock when Apple comes out with something that competes, you know? But what was your point about the 20,000 Rand laptop? What was your point?
No, it's just like I find it increasingly more difficult to root for Windows PCs, even though I got my, 2HC2 update today. Feature update for Windows. And like, since kind of the middle of 2020, Windows 10 has been running exceptionally well on lower end hardware.
Agreed.
And it's an easy sell at that point. So it's like if you're spending 5 to 10,000 Rand on a machine, like it's okay to get something with 4 gigs of RAM. Depending on what you're gonna do with it. Like if you even think about doing something more than what is within the Microsoft
Office
suite.
Productivity. Yeah. You can do your basic office productivity for 10 grand and below.
If you even think about doing anything more, it's like don't do that. It's in that kind of zone where you kind of want to do professional work. You want to do some more advanced kind of stuff. And that moves you into that 20 grand kind of window where it's an investment and you're expecting to get the return on your investment.
Yeah, you're going to use it hard for at least 2 years. You're going to push it hard for at least 2 years. Then you've got to start at 20. Yeah. Okay. But but what is the drum I was beating last week, which is why is it that after all this time, we only have two choices, Windows and Mac? Now, let me just, I mean, the drum I was beating last time was, the problem is it's too homogeneous, I think that's the word I'm looking for, where, you know, we have like a big ecosystem that's all one size. It's like Model T Fords. Does it come in black? Does it come in Windows? Everything just comes in Windows. So what happened this week was Microsoft Office had some kind of widespread outage. I don't know if you picked up on this. Teams and Office had huge syncing problems. Yeah. People were just locked out of services and all sorts of things. Now, here's an example of where if 85% of the world's commerce is going to run on Windows and they have a critical flaw like, you know, Windows cloud services in every country all just goes berserk, the whole world can actually be brought to its knees. In this instance, they started patching it up as quickly as they could, but it took them 48 hours just to normalize the service. You know, in commercial terms, that's like a disaster. And it's the problem with our lack of diversity in the workplace. If we're going to put all our eggs in that one basket, then, you know, this kind of shit's going to happen. And that's not good for us. This is why I back Huawei to produce another ecosystem, or I'll back anyone who will produce a viable ecosystem. What's attracting my attention right now is Linux on phones, for example. It's turning out to be harder to get Linux on phones than I'd thought. I, you know, with Linux, it's always just been available to any geek person who wants to go to the trouble of rooting machines and rooting phones. Now, if you try and get a good Linux-based mobile operating system on your phone, it's actually gotten quite complicated. The best one is not actually free. You actually have to pay for it. The Sailfish is probably regarded as the best. It looks fantastic. I'm so dead keen, but I think it only runs on a very small set of hardware at the moment, which is irritating in itself. But I'm going to pursue Linux on phones as a project, as a personal project.
So I was having this conversation with somebody, and I was like, half of the problem is that home computing has become super complex. Like when you're starting to mesh together a smart home, and you're doing like all the streaming across like different devices. You want everything to like sync with the cloud and everything to communicate. That is different devices. Super complex in the background, and very good computer science makes it like super simple. Like on the top, you can still dig and run scripts and build do things that can automate a lot of it for you, like macro. Like run a lot of macros and stuff, which I'm actually, that's like my personal project for this year, is to automate as much as I can, like up to half of what I do on the computer.
Interesting.
Should be automated.
I just want to run macros. So what was your point? How does that relate to Linux? Are you saying that Linux is still too technical to win because things have, complex things like Linux have now got a nice, simple, easy-to-use skin spread over them.
Yes.
And so we shouldn't be digging below that unless you know what you're doing, or unless you want to get into complexity, because there's really nice, usable, functional skins and over the top of the stuff.
Consumers are too sophisticated in their demands right now to release products that need you to fiddle. That's why I cannot still, to this day, with good conscience, recommend somebody buy a Huawei phone without Google services.
No, exactly. This is what's been discussed.
It just adds too much complexity, like to your life. Most likely your company is running on G Suite, and that immediately creates a problem. Massive problem.
But also philosophically speaking, technology adoption and its widespread adoption and use only works if we can simplify the damn thing. This was Steve Jobs' point all along, you know, because the idea is for everybody to be able to use computers or phones or whatever, we have to make some kind of sacrifices, which is, you know, we have to simplify and dumb down a lot of the interfaces, you know, but that way more people can actually use it. Okay.
Yeah, and that speaks to the heart of the issue I've been having lately with my S21 Ultra, which has been just like overheating all the time and like battery's not holding on the way it should. And then you get like the fanboys who start attacking me, and they're like, no, that cannot be happening. It's not happening to me. And I'm like, dude, I'm obviously operating this device on a different level to you.
Yeah. Yep.
And
yep.
it's failing to live up to its marketing claims in my context.
Right. So, I mean, Lindsay, by reputation, does very hectic things with his phone. He thinks nothing of like shooting 4K videos while doing something else at the same time. You know, very processor intensive stuff, multimedia intensive stuff. So, you know, I would expect that if someone was going to max out or expose flaws in that stuff, it would be you. But even when I reviewed it, I didn't do anything all that intensive. The phone would heat up and get warm in my hand, especially around the top. But now, I had conveniently forgotten that it was only a few years ago that Samsung made a phone that burst into flames, okay? And everyone's been carefully allowed to forget that that's the case. The Note 7, which, you know, by all accounts was going to be a fabulous product, burst into flame. And it was a PR disaster, and it went on for months and weeks as they try to claw those products back and then, you know, try to do damage control and all sorts of things. But, I mean, I worry that if these phones are getting as hot as they are, I hope we're not straying into that same territory again, man, you know?
I don't think that was a more a battery construction problem than anything else, and the safety checks within there. But what I found is when this thing runs hot, in 15 minutes, it will kill, like, background processors. And then you can only, like, use one thing at a time. And then within 40 minutes, it stops all processes.
Jeez.
And like you have to wait like 15 minutes.
No, but that is dysfunctional. That is dysfunctional. So if you get a phone like itself. This, yeah, but if you get a phone like this, it's because you plan to do sophisticated, complex, probably multimedia oriented things with it. You can't have it fail at that level.
Just to floss, just want to dunk on your haters. With your
So, okay, so what are you going to do about it, Brute? What are you going to do about it? It's like a close to 30,000 rand phone that's malfunctioning. What are you going to do about it?
I don't know. I don't know at this point. The offer still stands. Anyone who is willing to swap me a couple of things, one of them being a Note 20 5G from last year.
And another being an iPad Mini, yeah?
Yeah, an iPad Mini or iPad Pro.
Sure. For the amount of money you're talking about, you could well end up with a pro. Yeah.
Come talk to me. Talk to me. Right. Hit me up on the socials and we can maybe do a deal. The cameras on these are still amazing. The S21 Ultra cameras are incredible. But Gavin, that's my story for the week. Circuit Board newsletter comes out tomorrow. It focuses on stress.
Ooh.
And tracking of stress, because I've got the Fitbit Sense on my wrist, and I don't understand what it's trying to be.
Yes, I had the same problem. First of all, are you finding it a little too small and diminutive looking? Hold your arm up so I can see.
It does. It's a bit feminine.
That looks way feminine, Brew. Way too small, man.
Google Assistant, I've still not got triggered. There's a couple of features that I still want to expand on, but it's just this whole concept of like, why are we tracking stress specifically? This measures like your skin, which is a way that I've seen stress. This is like a novel way that.
Yeah.
My daughter asked me a question and then it sent me down the rabbit hole of like looking at what the measurement tools are and how this data is being processed in the market. And it's like, you can't get a device that's going to help you stress less. So it's like, if you have a device that's telling you you're stressing all the time, what does that do? How does that help us?
Well, I think the point is that over time, you can see a pattern of stress. So you can see the kind of situations that stress you. I mean, when they started off measuring stress, I was very skeptical, but because how they were measuring it was when you have an elevated heart rate without doing any physical activity. That was their definition of stress, was your heart rate goes up, but you're not moving around, which is an interesting way to define it. But now, as you say, they are measuring, I think, between 2 points on the skin.
Yeah.
It's still a bit of a mystery what they're measuring and how they're measuring it. And I have no doubt that it's probably wildly inaccurate. But I think this is driven by medical companies and all sorts of other interested parties who know that stress is going to be a big marketable issue in the future. So if we can measure stress, you know, people are seeing dollar signs out of this one way or another. So I think for that reason, there will be R&D behind improving stress measurements. That's why I think they're interested in measuring stress. I'm interested in my stress levels because a lot of the time I feel stressed, but it doesn't register stress on my wearable. And I don't understand why. My Huawei also measures stress. I think it does it probably completely differently to the...
It tells you it does, Gavin, but that snake oil is powerful.
What else can you tell us about the Fitbit Sense so far?
It's fine. It's a fine wearable. Other things that are going on, I have the Instax, the Fujifilm Instax SQ1, which is a confounding device. Again, it's completely virtually analog. It's an instant camera. It has no screen. It has a viewfinder, and you take a picture and it prints. There's no digital backup. It runs on batteries as well.
Yeah.
There's 10 per pack, and you have to use them wisely. And yeah, I'm shooting a video this weekend. Will probably be out next week, as next week Monday. Just like contextualizing this analog product in a hyper digital world.
Yeah, I've used a couple of those. The Fuji one I've used, and the Canon one I've used. The Canon one is a completely different printing process. Is yours using Zinke or
I
is yours
have?
What I found was the idea is kind of cool in theory, but I found the prints were like so tiny that they didn't like inspire a person because they were very, very small. I think they're about 7 centimeters or something like that. You know, it's not enough to really get a person excited. It's like looking at a passport photo or something, you know? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but it's an interesting idea.
Yeah. That's about it on that side. And that opinionguy.co.za is where you'll find all of that and me on the internet. Sharpshooters is where I am on social media. Gavin, what's up with you?
I'm busy working on my TV shootout at the moment. So I've got Sony is back in the country. So I've reviewed a Sony TV. I'm busy looking at a Skyworth TV at the moment. I've got an LG TV standing around here, and I've got a Hisense TV incoming. So I'm not going to tell you where I live, because obviously this would be a good time to Google my house.
We're seeing a new Hisense thing tomorrow, a laser.
That's right. It's like a laser projector. Yeah.
That's going to be quite interesting. I might make some content around that whole idea.
But will your S21 stand up to the content, or will it burn down?
Only in 15-minute bursts.
Speaking of which, I think we're out of time. We've kind of gone long. Okay.
That we are. Gavin, as always, it's a pleasure.